Okay, then we will move on and discuss the agenda, any changes needed before it's approved. I have one change. Karen Lynch is going to be here, but she's going to be here late, so we will move her leading the bylaws review until she gets in and has a chance to get settled down. Is there anything else that we need to change? Can we assume the agenda is adopted with that change? Approval of past meeting minutes. I want to thank Lorda and John for getting the minutes out to us so far in advance. I've almost forgotten what they said, but I did read them. I did send minor edits back, and so I would like to entertain a motion, since we've had plenty of time to review them, to approve them. Mary Ann.
I'm willing to do that if you have suggested that it be the first sentence say that it was the June meeting that was called to order, because it says April.
Yeah. Right here. Open up. He's catching it.
Okay.
It just says the wrong month.
With that, I move to approve the minutes.
Okay. So much for my in-depth edit. Okay. Okay. Discussion. All in favor of approving the minutes as with the one edit by Mary Ann? Raise your hands. Opposed? Okay. And now we're ready for Mr. McBride. And Lloyd is not here, so we
can't do her part.
How about if we just do a quick update for those of us who went on the Silver Line tour while we're waiting for Mr. McBride? Does anybody have any pearls of wisdom to?
Is there a slideshow? Slideshow? Oh, not yet. I thought it was something.
Yes.
I thought we were going to see it.
I'm now on an
echo. Do you know the address of the slideshow? I can put it up on the screen.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm now in an exercise program due to that slideshow. All those fat pictures of me. Yeah, I got it to load. Lloyda, while we're doing that, since we're sort of skipping around waiting for Mr. McBride, do you have the time to give an update of the RAC support, to update the RAC on the hiring of the staff coordinator?
Hello. So I don't have a lot of new information to share with you.
Okay,
so I don't have a lot of new information to share with you, because I sent an email over the weekend sharing with you that James Jackson is going to join us beginning on July 21st, and then he has 3 days of orientation. In my email I say two, but now there has been a third day added in the last 6 months that I wasn't aware of. So he's actually going to be in orientation, new employee orientation, for 3 days, and then he'll be here with us. And Carol is correct that he obviously will be here for the August meeting. And I think Carol also wanted me to give a little update on the recruitment for the new RAC members. We are still on track for the board to make appointments at its July meeting.
Okay. And why don't we look at the slideshow and then
yeah. And fluorescent.
Well, one of the nice things that happens is that when the elevators are the list of elevators that are one set up elevators in each station, there also are accessible restrooms, which many of the RAC members and even everybody can try out.
Usability tested. And yeah, locked. I was personally locked in, I thought.
instead of the configuration of three escalators, you know, in a row, they have escalators on the outside and stairs on the inside.
So there's not duplicate escalators. Basically, there's only one up.
There's only one escalator going up, so you actually have to exit the station. You actually have to exit the elevator. But there's on the duplicate stairs. There's only one escalator. There's one of the stations we went to. We had one escalator. And what's going up? So when you exit, so people that cannot actually take the stairs or the stairs have to take the elevator. There's no escalator going down.
Well, there is, but you have to walk.
It's just at the other end.
Yeah, but if it's on my exit.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a very hot day, and they had that steam, so we were stuck in the bridge, like, oh, yes, yes.
This is Spring Hill. Spring Hill is, I believe, Spring Hill is the furthest west station in Texas. Right.
You were his favorite subject.
No, I'm not all the stations have are accessible by vehicles. But
right.
So the second station we went to, the next one, it's in the middle of Route 7. There's no, you can't drop. They're parking on the, they're parking now, but probably won't be.
I think that I heard that where we saw a temporary, more like construction parking lot, that was going to be the Kiss and Ride sort of place.
Right, Spring Hill, I think, where the bus stop you're off is going to be the Kiss and Ride lot, or I'm not sure about Greensboro.
Greensboro didn't look like there was.
Yeah, I can't remember which was which, yeah.
It was sort of a real kind of shock when, you know, we were seeing all this brand new, never been used stuff, and then we up pulls an old, dirty, dusty metro road. It was sort of like shocking.
You know what? It looks like a space shuttle somehow, the way that it's built, because it's built across the highway.
Now, I think, you know, some of the walkways, instead of having glass, they have like, what would you call it?
Mesh.
And at first, this was great, as Lorraine says, it was a very hot day. But then we started thinking about how that would feel if you were walking across it and it was wind, you know. And also for people who have a lot of allergies, you know, that's like a lot of spots for the pollen to grab onto on its way, you know, onto your hair, skin.
like this is the, so this is the paint area at Greensboro. And if you can see, there are two elevators there that will bring you back down to the platform, and then beyond that,
Is the is one escalator and staircase pair, and then beyond that is another escalator and staircase pair, here and then there.
I do think that the AAC provided feedback on escalators.
We did.
Yeah.
Right. The other, can I?
Go,
I'm
yes.
Sorry. Thank you for that. Okay. The other thing that we had, there were some call boxes on the sides of some of the pylons that were difficult for folks with their wheelchairs to access. So there was a discussion on that, but then we got more into this, you know, the way the pylons were constructed. So I'm not sure whether those can be moved or not. The other area that was of interest, and I think this has probably come up here also, is that the stations are big. There's a lot of walking between when you get on the train, when you enter the station. So from a blind person, let's say mobility issue, my recommendation was that there's going to have to be some pretty good mobility training, which I don't think is impossible. So I think that's one thing. Folks in wheelchairs talked about the grading of the, you know, particularly the crossover of Route 7 and what would happen if that got to be really icy. So there was a little bit of concern over that. On the positive side, I would say in general, they liked the stations. They liked what they saw. They thought they were well done. We want to go back when it's dark so we can check the lighting out. Particularly of interest was the tiles. The tiles were of a no-slip variety, and I'm sure that's been mentioned here, and I think that was important to the group. So overall, the AAC's feeling on this was very positive. So some issues with respect to signage, but from the AAC side, all the issues were taken down. They're being looked at, investigated. I'm sure there'll be some changes. Very minor changes, though, as far as that's concerned. So very very well done tour, I think, by the by both staffs. And the support was great, and my folks had nothing but praise, really, for what we were able to see before the stations opened.
And I would like to add, I think there was a sort of richness of the experience by going traveling with the AAC, because we saw it with, at least for me, I was speaking for myself, you saw it with a broader perspective. I think I was sensitive to things that I might not have been sensitive to had I not actually been taking the tour with people who were in wheelchairs or people who had, you know, low vision and low hearing. So I think that joint tour was a really good idea. Any more comments? Okay, well, we can get back to the agenda. I think Mr. McBride has arrived. And I want to say that there were seven of us, because I'm counting Patrick, double counting Patrick, Sheehan, at the subcommittee where Mr. McBride did lay out the concept that he's going to be laying out to us. And I thought that the leadership team, and we thought that it was important enough that more people should get a chance to hear directly from Mr. McBride. So while he's coming forward, I would just say this much. What we're going to do, Mr. McBride, is you give your presentation and we will hold our fire. And what we'll do then is go around and have people make comments. And because we had heard, some of us had heard it before, what I'm hoping is we will organize our comments as what did we like and why, what didn't we like and why, and what will we change and why. And John's going to sort of organize our comments in that fashion so that you have some organized comments to go take it back. So with that, thank you again for being willing to do this to the full Riders Advisory Council.
About now. Okay, great. Now, I thank the chair for her. or forewarning. That's no problem. No problem at all. Oh, thank you. Well, thank you again for inviting me to present what we're looking at this evening. And I'll be as brief as possible because, as usual, some people have seen the presentation before. This is a concept only. Please know that. We're looking at new ways to improve our signage because the system is growing. And we are looking at a design that allows us to continue to sign the system that is, in fact, expanding. Should I just say next slide? Is that how this works? Great. Okay, just a bit of background very quickly. We evaluated the current system for its effectiveness and suitability for its ability to expand. And when I say expand, I mean adding stations, if you will. We found that there were some issues around ADA compliance. There were some real design issues, and there were some costs associated, some issues associated with cost. We explored many possibilities and came up with the design concept that you'll see today. We vetted the proposal with many internal departments, that is, most of the departments that are touch points for signage and service throughout the system. The in-house panels found that the proposal effectively addressed our findings, and they suggested that we present the proposal beyond staff, if you will. Next slide. Basically, what we looked at throughout the various sign types, we looked at messaging, we looked at design, and we looked at location, that is, location of the signs. Next slide. The first sign type that we looked at is called a SAL, Station Ahead List. And we found that the layouts were not very intuitive on the SALs. We found that the information was not sufficiently prioritized. When you look at the sign, you don't know where to start. You don't know where to lay your eyes first, if you will. We found that the information was not standardized or uniform throughout. We found that the layouts were not necessarily suitable for their locations. We also found that there was a very, very, very high cost associated with producing 182 custom layouts to outfit the system. If you notice now, when you look at a SAL in the system, it starts from where you are, and then it continues to the end. We also found that not all the signs were ADA compliant, and once again, the cost to produce the SALs as they are very, very expensive. Next slide. This is what you have now. As you can see, the information is not necessarily prioritized. It's kind of confusing. You look at it and you go, what do I look at first here? Not a very effective graphic. Basically, the SALs as they are become mini maps. Next slide. And I'll jump right over this. Well, actually, I won't. There's two or three things I want to call out. As I said earlier, there are 100 to outfit the system with SALs. We are required to do 182 layouts. This new proposal will allow us to do 14 layouts to outfit the entire system. So that's a dramatic difference, as you can see. The reduction of the layouts will also help with production cost. And the other thing worth pointing out here is that the information we feel is more visually prioritized and standardized, if you will. Next slide. In order to do that, what we had to do is we organized the system in seven regions, and we had to employ our cardinal directions to do that. So if you can sort of suspend for the moment what you know about the system and how it's organized. We've inserted an added element to assist with wayfinding and to create a more uniform signage package, if you will, or program. Next slide. Again, I want to refer back to what you experience now in the system. And this is not only in horizontal format, it also appears in vertical format, if you know it, along the pylons. So we're going to go from this to next slide to this. The attempt there was to once again make the information more visual, to prioritize the information. Like the first thing you see is the direction of the train, simply because of its size. The second thing you see is where the train goes, in front of you and behind you, the entire line. To call out what station you are at, you can see that there is one station named Forest Glen, which is in a white capsule. That helps you with identifying where you are. These will appear on the all along the platform sides on each side. Next slide. This was the most complicated one, orange, silver, and blue. The advantage here, one of the things is that you, if you are on the silver line, for example, you see every place that the train stops along the silver line. If a station also has other stations, color lines that are served at the station, there are dots beside those as well. The other thing that we did is we've added leaders that go from the station name to the actual dot. Again, shifting your thinking just a little bit. If you're at a station, you want to know what service is available at that station. This cell, as it is laid out, will do just that for you. It'll also tell you where you can transfer and to what color lines you can transfer to. And again, this is the most complicated. Next slide. Eastbound, this would appear only in a blue line, east-westbound. This would appear in a station that only services the blue line. And this was a unique one because that would be Arlington. Next slide. Again, keeping the concept as crisp and clean as possible. Next slide. Next slide. Again, this would only appear in Green Line stations. Next slide. Next slide. Also, the cells that you just saw are on the vault walls all along the platform. And on center platforms, however, these will be above the advertising display units. So you'd actually be able to walk up to them to read the information. And as you can see on the bottom, the station that you're at is called out with a black capsule. And the leaders have been reverted, obviously, to black. Next slide. Just a little play here. Somebody asked me, well, you know, how do you give directions if you're using this northwest, you know, cardinal direction? And so we did some experiments. We actually did 12 of them, and this is basically what we came up with. How do I get from Washington National Airport to Tacoma Station? Most people, and this is sort of standardized language, if you will, typical. You catch the yellow line to Greenbelt. You transfer at Fort Totten. You catch the red line to Glenmont and get off at Tacoma. That's using the existing direction, if you will. Using the proposed system, you would simply say, catch the northbound yellow line to Fort Totten, transfer to the eastbound red line, get off at Tacoma. So not only does this make the information that you see, not only does it simplify the information that you see, but when you talk about it, when you give verbal directions, it also becomes simplified, those directions. Next slide. Just another typical one, and I'll go through very quickly. How do I get from Waterfront Station from Wheelie Avenue? You catch the silver line to Largo Town Center, transfer at Lafont Plaza, catch the green line to Branch Avenue, get off at Waterfront, as opposed to catch the eastbound silver line, transfer at Lafont Plaza, catch the southbound green line to Waterfront. In most instances, you've reduced your directions by at least a line. And also, it puts the critical information at the end of the direction, if you will. Next slide. wall-mounted station name signs. These are the signs that you see along the station rooms, if you will. Next slide. Basically, the concerns were pretty intuitive. The only difference on, were similar. The only difference on this is that these signs we found were really oversized. There's a lot of sign face and a little bit of information. Next slide. This is what we have in the system now. It's, as I said earlier, there's a lot of sign face for what is basically a little bit of information. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Great. So we went from the one that you just saw, the station name sign that you saw, to this one. As you can see, the information is visually prioritized. The first thing you would notice, I assume, would be that you see the name of the station, Smithsonian. The second thing you would see is the direction that the trains are going. And the third thing that you would see, we hope, would be the exit information. That is where you end up if you exit the stations. Next slide. Yet another example. Again, seeing the station name is far more prominent. Direction, train direction, and exit designations, if you will. Now, right now, the system that's being put in now, it would take the station name sign, and then you'd have a SAL, and then you'd have a third sign, which provides exit information. So it takes three signs to provide this information using the existing system. With the proposed system, you'd have two signs. Next slide. This is a typical layout of what you'd see. You'd have the station name information, which also includes exit information. You'd have the SAL, and then you'd have the station name again. Now, this pattern would repeat along the platform on both sides. Next slide. Next slide. Basically, here, what we looked at, what we were concerned with, were high production costs and inconsistent messages. And a lot of the designs were not sustainable. That is, that if you had to modify the signs, you'd have to create a whole new sign type, which is not such a great idea. Next slide. This is just, these are not substantial changes, but just FYI, it costs a lot of money to build a pylon. So what we've done here is we've simply lowered the name of the station name, so that we could accommodate future growth if additional lines are added to a particular station. For example, the one on your far left, that's one line. We have the ability to add two additional lines if we added a line at a particular station. Again, this is just primarily a cost savings measure. The station names dropped about 9 inches or so. Also, we've added tactile information and access information to these in a uniform format. Next slide. In order to accommodate the use of cardinal directions, we'd have to modify the map just a bit by simply indicating where the terminus station is, for example, if it's on the east, if it's east, or if it's west, if it's north, if it's south, etc. Next slide. These signs you see at mezzanine level, and you'll generally see them at the entrance of escalators and or stairs. This is pretty much what you see now. Again, you can see the terminal stations are listed just below the colored disc. Next slide. And we're proposing, if we move to a cardinal direction, we're proposing this format. The advantage here is that, if you go back one, please. You'd have to be pretty close up to see these in terms of what direction. And we all know if you're standing at the fare gate or at the kiosk and you're looking, you need to know, which way am I going? This, you'd have to go beyond the fare gates, and you'd have to get pretty close to find that out. With these, you can see it from a distance. Next slide. Just another example. Next slide. Emergency pylons, basically, we simply are moving to resurface those to make emergency call-outs more prominent. I think now the signs probably say help, And unfortunately, what's happened is a lot of customers will think that that means I can get train information, but that's not the case. Next slide. This is what we have now in terms of the heights of the information that appears on vertical surfaces. That's sort of all over the place. Next slide. And we've sought to standardize the locations of the ADA symbols, what we're calling the ADA symbol set. Next slide. And just a few more examples of how the graphics might appear on vertical surfaces. And going again to the one on the far left, the prominence of what you can do if you simplify your message. You increase viewing distances substantially. Next slide. Just some more examples of how the use of cardinal directions might simplify wayfinding throughout the system. On the upper left is what you see if you're standing on the platform at Largo, for example, I believe it is. It's a lot of information there, but if we move to Cardinal, you can see the one on the right. Very simple. You're running. You're trying to catch the train. Do I go east or west? You see it right away. You don't have to think about, well, does the Franconia Springfield, I mean, do I go that way or do I go the other way? It's very simple. A lot of folk that we've presented this to like the notion of the cardinal direction because most people in all your travels is pretty much what you do. The interesting thing about using cardinal direction for the system, though, is it's more the direction of the train, the movement of the train. Is it moving northward? Is it moving westward or eastward, et cetera? It will require some education on the part of the public and staff as well, should we go in that direction. Again, simplification on the bottom two. One of the other things that the existing system does that we have to fix is that there isn't sufficient contrast. The existing system has gray backgrounds in some instances, and we're proposing that we not do that. We're also proposing that we incorporate the international pictograms throughout the system. As you probably know, as you travel around the world, everybody does it, and Metro is certainly an international community that serves world population, if you will. Next slide. Again, this is typical of what you might see on a wayfinding sign that's installed between two columns, if you will. The top one shows you, I mean, what we do now, a lot of information. The bottom one shows you what the possibility is. Next slide. Same here, typical top. The gray is not acceptable, and we're proposing to change it to brown. A lot of people say, well, why not? You know, we don't like the brown. Well, the brown is quintessential Metro. It's almost iconic, so we'd like to stay with it in its own right. Next slide. Tactile, next slide. We found that many of the messages were inconsistent. There were some issues with ADA compliance there, and it's very important that the signs be located in standardized locations. As people are trained, people who may be compromised, site compromised, if you will, it's important that they know exactly where they can find the information that they need throughout the system. Next slide. Just a slight change here. The existing transit police sign, we felt this is out of compliance. The centered letters is something that a lot of people who are visually impaired will have a problem with. Hard margins are always better. Also, the use of the orange to call out that, you know, this is the this is an important number. And it's certain the orange will get your attention as well. Next slide. These are simply a lot of what you see in the system right now. We simply increase the text heights just to be ADA compliant. Next slide. And again, a simplified version of the tactile signs that you see on the entrance pylons. Again, the language, the use of the cardinal directions generally make the message much simpler. Next slide. Same here, message simplification, if you will. Next slide. Just an improvement to the ADA entrance sign. Many people think the sign on the left is the wheelchair has to appear in blue. That's not true. ADA says that you just simply have to have sufficient contrast, generally 30-70 contrast. So we are improving those signs by beefing up the contrast, if you will, and also adding the elevator. Next slide. Same here. This is what you might see on a pylon. Instead of lots of information, blue line to Franconia, Springfield, silver line to Willie, Reston East, you would simply see blue line westbound, silver line, well, westbound as well. Okay? Next slide. Next steps. Again, we are working aggressively to vet this as much as we can, to get as much input as we can. No design is a good design unless it addresses the needs of all of its potential end users. And with that in mind, we're vetting as much as we can. We have to do a cost analysis and an implementation analysis, because you can't really sort of do this in one part of the system and not another part. So it has to be universal, if you will. We would present the scheme and the costs associated with implementing the scheme to leadership for their final blessing or thumbs up or down, whatever. We also would develop a procurement strategy and an implementation plan. And then once if that's a go, then we would install the signs and evaluate the scheme and make modifications as necessary. No matter how much vetting you do, sometimes there are things that you just don't think about. Okay. Sure.
What I'd like to do at this point is to go around and kind of capture on the first go around what we like. Okay. And I guess it also makes sense is if there are any questions, why don't we proceed that with any questions people might need to clarify, because that might change your what we like. So let's go around and do that. And can we start with you, Barbara?
What I liked. Well, I think, not sure I'm wired that way. There was a lot I liked about it, the simplification, fewer words. I think the directions, for the most part, the directional is good. I do know a lot of people, if you ask them which way is north or south, west or west, they don't know, but I think they know where their destination is. I'm hoping they do, but I think that's it. Go ahead, Patrick.
Thank you. I think you probably got a lot of this from my committee. But I think that the signage, making sure that the signage is universal, I think some of the universal signage, particularly for wheelchairs, I think, and that's been talked about before. Also the color contrast. Improving the color contrast of the signage is important. So you've got some things that were correct as far as being able to see what was useful and on the signs as far as height and that sort of thing. I know that my committee's given you a lot of information on that, so they were the experts, particularly low vision people on the committee.
I also like the use of universal symbols. I think that's a good thing. And a question that I would have just for future answering is, how much money will this actually save, given the fact that you're going to have to change every sign in the system?
Is that a question?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. As I said, the next steps will be a cost analysis. Ultimately, what happens is, because this is a system that we're looking at to implement related to the completion of Dulles Phase 2, a lot of the signs will be a part of cost of that project. What happens now is when we expand the system or expand a line, all the signs that have that terminus station on it have to change, including at transfer stations. If you run downstairs and, you know, you catch a train, it says Largo. If the line expands beyond Largo, then all those signs have to change. But if that sign said eastbound, that sign wouldn't have to be changed. You'd have to change some signs, but not all signs.
Fred.
I especially like the south, big improvement there. But I did have a question. It's occurred to me recently I've seen Metro hanging new signs all over the place. So is that, at least along the orange line there, and there's lots of new signs being hung. Is that like a different project?
There are several projects that have signage components in them, like the station, the platform renovation projects. It includes some signage. If the signage has to be removed, for example, it has to be replaced. Does that answer the question?
Well, I just. Or this looks great, except I've been seeing them hanging all these new signs. I'm thinking, oh my goodness! So now we're going to have to take them down and put new ones up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the real design flaws with the signage system that we're implementing now is again that it has vertical sals, and right now the station name, the list of station names, are right at the threshold. In many instances, they're slightly over. You add six more stations to the silver line, and that list is going to hit the floor, because you can't take it up. You can only go down. If you raise it, then the text height has to increase. So.
I like to see the sign to be more ADA compliant. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Then pretty soon we're going to have a 91 station. And that means it's a lot of work to change signs that will be clear to everyone. And also, you might think about before you buy a sign or before you get into cost analysis, you have to think about whether you should keep it westbound, eastbound, in case the train has to move over to another track going in a different direction.
But you raise a very good point, because not only will the signs, what we call hard face signs, not only will those change, but the information that appears on the trains will also have to change. So it would be a very comprehensive approach, and also the announcements that you hear in the stations would change as well.
Lorraine.
The things that we like, I like the new emergency, the new signage for the emergency pylons. And all, you know, the universal signs.
Frank.
Hi. I like the cardinal directions. I think that's a big improvement. And I think I like, but I have a question about the frequency of the station signs along the station wall. Mm-hmm. Let me say it this way. I always seem to find the seat on the train that stops where I can't see a sign where I am. I never know where I am in the system.
There's one in every train.
I'm just wondering, is there going to be a more frequent repeat with these signs, or is it just going to be the same standard repeat that exists now?
Good question. Right now, what you call cadence, right now the signs are 50 feet on center. And as I said earlier, it takes three sign types to give you the information that we feel two sign types can give you. So you'd see the information repeated more frequently along the platform.
Bob? Bob?
Yeah, I'm still struggling with general directional versus the terminal. I'm still, my own mind, I still haven't resolved the directional versus the terminus approach. It's still a little confusing to me because I think somebody, you may have said it, I'm not sure where people really are thinking whether they're going north, south, east, west, or in the system. And I'm just looking at the red line. I mean, when you head out towards Shady Grove and you head out towards Glenmont, you're essentially going in the same direction. I mean, north. Yeah. So that's just one thing. There may be some other opportunities to use more bilingual signs. I've seen a few things in here that could have a little bit of bilingualism. Is it bilingualism? Is that the right term? Yeah. I don't. This is the right time to talk about. I mean, things like vetting. You know, I think.
Things like what?
Vetting this. I mean, I think.
No.
You have to,
hold
that's
up
later.
On that.
Okay.
Okay. Please.
That's the whole there. Yeah. And I want to make sure this is not a solution looking for a problem. I mean, that's, are we talking about helping normal users of the system, infrequent users of the system, people who only use it here in town for 2 days out of their whole lives, users of the system. That's just a general op. The general observation.
Okay. Can I comment on the use of the terminus? Interestingly enough, as I was sort of doing research on this, Metro actually started out by using cardinal directions. The original was incorporated cardinal directions. And then they converted to inbound, outbound. What this proposal includes is basically, it's the relationship between the terminus stations. Is it east? Is it west? And we were trying to avoid the sort of intermediate cardinal directions, northeast, northwest, et cetera. Just keep it hard for cardinals.
So give me an example, please.
Give
me an example. Of, it's vis-a-vis where the stations end. And the relationship to the end station?
It's the relationship between one station and the other on the same line.
At the terminus?
Yes. For example.
So in my example, mm-hmm. you say Glenmont is east because it's east of Shady Grove.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. We're getting into it. Let's do. We're two people away from what I like.
Okay.
So, if okay. That. Yeah. Okay. I like as I mentioned at the AAC meeting. I'm directionally challenged. We'll get into that later. What I like very much is the fact that you know where you are on the system at any point in time. I like the fact that you show all of the lines so you can kind of get a sense of what your options are. So I like that very much. I have a suggestion which could save even more money. Why have the word station on these signs? In other words, when you show the pylons, you say Judiciary Square Station. Think of how much money could be saved if you dropped the station. What else is it?
That on the exterior pylons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no real cost there. I mean, basically, I don't know if you're familiar with porcelain enamel, but it's basically glass baked on steel.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no real cost there. It's how do I put it? The other piece of it, because you're making me think about what I thought about. The other piece of it is that you need to identify it as a station.
As opposed to what, a river? What else could it be? You're underground.
It's not the Judiciary Square. It's the Judiciary Square Station.
Yeah, these are external. It only appears on the external pylons at the station entrance. Right. Yeah.
All right.
It calls out stations.
Good save.
Yeah.
Okay. 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 Now I think, because of Bob's comments, I think we need to have a third category. And I know we're running over time, but this is important, and I think that it's worth taking the extra time. We are going to get to the other presentations. Can we talk about what we don't like? And I'm going to take the privilege of the chair and say first, I have a problem with a directional system. And basically, Bob talked about it. I'm directionally challenged. And the idea of being underground and being forced to find to figure out what's east and west is very distressing to me. You mentioned you know, more training, but let's just put it that way. Yeah. I'm not so in some instances, particularly the red line, you're forcing a cardinal system when it really doesn't go that way. That's my comment, Barbara.
Well. Generally similar is that to what Bob said. I think to most of the blue line people and the yellow line people, they go south. I mean, if you're in town and you want to cross the river into Virginia, yeah, it is west, but the bulk of the line is north-south for Virginians. Mm-hmm. So that could be confusing. Still on that vein, the most complicated one you showed us, orange, silver and blue. It just struck me as a little odd that the one that goes north was in the middle and the one that goes due west was up above, and because it was westbound and that's how west is. But those aren't huge things. One thing I noticed, many of the signs are not in all caps, but some were. And it's, at least I've been taught that caps are harder for people to read than words that have the name capitalized. And so I thought that was a little interesting. Whenever you did your station, it was not in all caps on the long ones, but when you did it other places, it was all caps. And I think everything looks more alike in all caps. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
My next. Yes. Thank you. I think it was interesting, a phrase that was used earlier, a solution looking for a problem. First, I don't have a problem with the stations. The north, south, east, west doesn't give me any additional information because I'm going either to Glenmont or Silver Spring or Shady Grove or Grosvenor, whatever. So my destinations are station-based. Taking that off doesn't help. East, west, that doesn't give me anything. I don't care. I know what station I'm going to. I don't care if it's east, west, north, or south. Secondly, and you can help me with this, did I recall correctly that the station names would be taken off of, let's say, the red line? So it would be red line to Glenmont, but now it's just going to say east. Am I correct about that?
Right now we're looking at just including the cardinal direction. But that's not set in stone on the train itself. That's not set in stone.
So what's it going to say on the train? Glenmont?
In some instances, when the train doesn't go to the established terminus station, it might say something else. We haven't quite worked that through. But generally, again, the trains that come through the train room, you'll know that it's going in a particular cardinal direction on one side or the other.
Okay, but for me, I need to know if I'm on the red line, I need to know this train's either going to Glenmont or this train's going to Silver Spring. Mm-hmm. Having it say east isn't going to help me. So that kind of information is critical to my, because I'm going to skip a Silver Spring train because I go to Glenmont. Mm-hmm. So that's critical information. Sure. I think that's more complicated even as we go to Virginia, but I'm not an expert there, so maybe others can comment on that.
Thanks for the presentation. The first comment I have is I really ask you guys, you probably have done this already, but you probably don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are many metro systems in the world, and I hope you're looking at what they've done with similar types of lines, for example, and similar types of solutions. Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to what comments have come up in the internal review so far. The way that you phrase it makes it seem like it's been approved, but maybe not wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious as to what questions have come up from the other people within Metro about it. Just two comments specifically. I think the Northeast, I mean, I'm from Illinois, so everything is flat there, so we orient ourselves with those directions all the time. One comment I have is I teach GED to adults here in DC, and you'd be amazed how many people looking at a map, for example, can't tell you what direction north or east or west is. So, you know, I would ask you, like, for example, whatever you're going to do to make sure to coordinate it with that map, for example, putting the directions on that map. The other thing is, Metro Systems, for whatever reason, their map doesn't necessarily need to be geographically accurate. If you look at the London system, it's not even close. And somehow it works, and people are, it makes sense to people. So one thing that you could look at, for example, is playing around with the end of some of the lines. For example, like if the green line you're looking to try to convince people it's north-south, try to angle it a little bit more north-south on the map. I don't know what you do with the red line. I don't think you can stretch it out far enough where it looks east-west. But, you know, I would just open that up. I know it's another sign, and it, like, appears in the whole system is probably a big production cost, but this is your reality. And I think if you can make that reality, especially with the northeast, southwest on there, I think people would be more comfortable with it. And, you know, you're changing a lot of things. You could change more, you know, if it makes it make sense. The one detail I noticed is on the side of the train when, again, I'm the same way. I'm always looking out at the wall to see what the train station name is. It looked like you were alternating between the station name and a sign that was basically the line with all of the stops on it.
The cell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's fine because you were saying it's going to be two instead of three types. But I don't know if you want to put that much detail at a smaller font between people and where the trains are going. I'm not sure you want people peering over there to see the stop. I mean, I guess that's probably the way it is right now, but I don't know how many, especially these bigger signs, I don't know if it, first of all, if they're going to be able to see the stuff, second of all, if you really want people looking that direction towards the stuff. But thank you for listening.
Oh, sure. Should I comment?
No.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Carol. I appreciate that.
No, you know why? No, because in all fairness, I want to try to get through everybody's comments. John is capturing them, so I would like to make sure. I'd rather hear from everybody, because this is probably our last chance to get it all in. Catherine. Okay.
Nothing particularly new, just reiterating what others have said. I don't find the east-west on red line to be at all intuitive. For the short-turn trains, both the red line and yellow line, how sometimes it goes to Fort Totten, sometimes it goes to Mount Vernon, knowing the endpoint matters. And I may be the only one in the room who thinks this way, but I tend to think of the terminals in terms of are they in Maryland or Virginia? Not east-west, not north-south, not necessarily names of stations, but I always think, am I going to Virginia or am I heading toward Maryland?
Yeah, red is special. We decided since it starts in Maryland, yes, in case you're confused.
East of Maryland, west of Maryland, no.
Yeah. I'm another person that has problems with north, south, east, west, and a lot of it is because you're underground so much that no longer makes any sense. And when you're going up and down, I don't know which direction the stations are going and get myself totally confused. And so I would agree with the comments that have been made. The visibility, I've said what you're doing with trying to make things clear, but people can't see through trains. And often when you're trying to figure out where you are, you're looking through a train, so the things that are on the station or that you see in cars become more important than what are on the back wall. The other thing that I see living in Silver Spring is even there you're near the end of the line. People ask, is this the red line? And they ask, does this go downtown? And so getting, which was the inbound, outbound, to DC stations where they have, you're going through Union Station, there's some landmarks that can also help people, I think, figure out where they're going.
Again, I also, just to echo yet again, I think the east, the cardinal directions are not correct, and they don't work with rush plus either. Where does the southbound yellow line end? Is it during rush hour? Does it end at Huntington or does it end at Franconia Springfield? The answer when you say southbound is yes. So that's a problem. I was sitting here thinking, all right, if you get out of the eastbound, westbound, how do you solve the problem that you're trying to solve, which is uniform signage that doesn't have to change if the system expands? I think the problem is not with what's on the signs, but with the structure of the signs. So if you make the signs so that you can remove a piece of them rather than the whole thing, then you can change that piece whenever you want. So if you know, then if you add an extra stop after Glenmont, you just have to change that one piece of the sign that says Glenmont rather than make them all say westbound or eastbound. That makes everybody confused. And I think the same is true with the SALs. Rather than trying to fit all of those lines on one thing, why not have individual signs underneath that show each individual line? Because when you put them all together, especially in those complicated, blue, orange, silver ones, having the lines overlap each other doesn't make visual sense. But if you have them separated out, you can still see where all the stations are. But you could say, okay, I'm about to get an orange line train. Where does that go? And it's an easier visual cue that way.
Mm-hmm. So, are you saying separate the lines?
Yeah, so instead of trying to fit them all on one thing where you have all the lines sort of mixed up, have a separate sign, one for the orange line, one for the silver line, one for the blue line. And that also helps when changes happen. Then you'd only have to change the SAL for that one line as necessary.
Yeah, we're doing the system itself is modular, so that you bring up a very good point. I mean, there are components that you can take out, et cetera. But keep in mind that the text heights are critical here. And to go back to the gentleman's comment here, if you move the sign up, the text height increases.
Right. But if you lay out the sign such that the center of it, which has the end of the station name, where you are or where you're going, is big enough that it could accommodate any number of changes, and I'm sure there's sort of a margin of error there,
right. Then
it could still work, and you would be able to, in effect, keep most of the signage even when the system changes.
Right. There are provisions to add one or two stations, but if you add more, then that becomes a whole nother,
right.
A whole nother
right.
animal, if you will.
But then you wouldn't have to change the entire sort of the entire aura of the system, if you will,
right. Just
by, instead of having one metal sheet, have a sheet of metal that has multiple pieces that you can take in and out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Brad.
So I was struck by your comment about the brown is iconic. And after listening to, and I actually think the thing that is more iconic is, this is the orange line to Vienna. I actually think that that is iconic in the, we could argue about it if you want, but I think that's more iconic than the brown color. The second thing was, just my small comment is, so I was sitting here thinking about, like, the cost of all this flexibility, and I was trying to think, when the next time we'd add a line to the metro, and since it's taken us roughly 30 years to add one line, I got a feeling the signs will all wear out long before we get to that. And then my last comment is, if I was going to spend money on signage in the metro, this would be my lowest priority thing. I think there are other more pressing signage issues that riders need to know currently what is going on the system.
Mm-hmm. When you say more pressing signage needs, do you mind my asking?
The PIDs.
Oh, okay, that's, yeah. Got
well,
it.
I mean, if there's only so much money.
Right.
So I would spend my money, this is the last place I'd spend my money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Deborah.
Talk about have a vertical name of the station on a pylon. We need to evaluate how good, how easy for people to read from up and down. That's one thing that concerns me. If we have a name on the state on a vertical, vertical pile, how easy for them to read from top to bottom? Mm-hmm. That's my concern. Okay.
Lorraine, thank you.
I have a question on the presentation itself, just because I got confused. There is one of the slides says proposed blue line SALDA signs. And then it says, the next one says proposed blue-yellow SALDA signs. And then the other one says proposed yellow line signs. So we're going to have, there are a lot of area in the blue and yellow that are together. And so does that mean that we have one that just calls for the blue and then one's for just for the yellow and then one for the two colors?
Yes, because if you're in the station, you want to know where that particular line goes. And there are certain stations that serve one line, two lines, three lines on up. So, for example, if you're at Arlington, you want to know everything the blue line does from where you are. That's why you have just one blue line going, a blue line SAL at Arlington. If you need to transfer along the line, the dot is there to indicate the transfer.
But I felt that that sort of it's more or less the same way as the whole silver, orange, and blue line signage that has everything all together.
Yeah, the ones that you saw that have three lines, that's a station that serves the orange line, silver line, and blue line. That's how we'll be in that those stations. So once again, the SALs are station specific by the color line served at the station and the number of lines as well.
Okay, so it's, if it's one of those stations that it sometimes serves the yellow line, sometimes it doesn't, how do you specify? Because I may be there, this serves the yellow line, but not today, you know?
Yeah, it's
or
actually,
not at this time. Mm-hmm. So how do you correct that?
The SAL that's designed for those stations does indicate by it's striped, which is the way it is now. Now, keep in mind that, you know, there are announcements and things like that that augment some of these special scenarios, if you will, like Rush Plus.
As opposed to many of my colleagues here, I love directions, but I'm not going to argue that. But along with that, I love maps, and so the thing that I don't like in this is the design of the SAL, because on the SALs where there are multiple lines, where there are two or three lines, it makes it. One of the things I know I look for, especially if there are multiple lines, is which is going to get me to the next station fastest. And because the SAL with two or three lines, I'm looking at proposed orange, silver, and blue, it makes it look like, you know, from Boston to East Falls Church is a long ride, you know, because it's not to scale. But that's because all of the other stations have had to fit in there. I don't know if you can put something about not to scale or come up with some of the design thing, but I find that confusing.
That's about separating
right, something like that.
That now is the time to bring up the bedding.
Just in terms of the bilingualism, you have the Central Transit Police, you have the Spanish information. Mm-hmm. The next one over, in terms of what's prohibited, I'm not directionally challenged. So when I get on the road and it says north, I know I'm going north, not vis-a-vis another road. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's vis-a-vis another road. The only time I'm directionally I'm going to do the opposite, okay? Really do the opposite.
source of information. It should not be signs. It should be Metro employees. And we should get them the hell out of us fortresses that are at each station. We should train them in a little bit of customer relations. So people can go and say, I just arrived in Washington. How do I get to, you know, from point A where I am to point B? Take five stops, get off at so-and-so, and you're there. A transfer. You know, that would be, I really think that's a more fundamental issue with getting around on the metro system. And that's why I asked originally, who are we trying to help here? I know. I'm sure everybody else here, everybody at this table, because they're mutant metro riders, a long-time metro riders on this committee, want to get around. It's just, there's some category of person you want to reach, and you're willing to spend millions of dollars to help by redoing the science system. And I'm not sure that's absolutely right. So I do agree with Daniel. He raised the issue of other systems in the world. There must be systems in the world that are easy to get around, that people can understand. And I volunteer to go out and support the Daniel.
And I volunteer to carry your bags.
Absolutely. So, if you can't ignore anybody's advice here, I mean, of course, you reserve the right to ignore anybody's advice here. And I really suggest to you, the first thing you do is to try it in one station and see if it works. Before you change all these signs, many stations Metro has, mm-hmm. to make sure that people aren't just as confused or more confused than they ever were. You really need to get this thing right for the sake of Metro, because you don't want to get, Metro doesn't need any more examples of getting it wrong.
Well, you raise a very good point in terms of getting public feedback, because one of the things that we most likely will do will be focus groups. We generally do, like when I design the fare charts, we sit behind this two-way mirror, we watch people react to the questions asked, et cetera. The same sort of thing would have to happen here, because it is an investment in the shifting of our culture and in expense.
You have to be able to measure the status quo versus the change, mm-hmm. not just the change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The part of the change is good or bad. The status quo is okay for a vast percentage of the
And what could conceivably happen is that not all components are worthy of pursuing. You could just cherry pick the pieces that that work, and leave the ones that don't alone.
Let me. Karen has not had
So I have a quick question.
Sure.
You mentioned that you did some research. Metro started out with terminal directions, mm-hmm. but I missed why the change to the directional versus terminal. Why the change?
They use cardinal directions when they were doing the red line. Mm-hmm. And it was a very simple system. It's like Baltimore, for all intents and purposes, that one line, which is the beginning of a more complex mm-hmm. system, goes north-south. And the more complex, in my research, the more complex the system is, the more simplistic the wayfinding system needs to be. And when Metro started adding lines to the red line, mm-hmm. again, they convert it to in and outbound.
Okay.
And then abandon it altogether.
Okay.
And this really is the final word. No.
Volunteering to visit Metro system. I actually have had a wonderful life, and I've actually been able to go to a lot of different Metro systems.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest advice to you in terms of the people that are best at signage are the Japanese. The Japanese have these incredibly complex train systems that have multiple types of train systems. And in terms of the design of it, but also where it is It's incredible. These Japanese stations are built for throughput, and I had no idea where I was going, but every time that I would walk down a certain part of the station and I needed certain information, I would look up or look where I was naturally looking, and that information was there. So I would beg you to at least look at the Japanese example, because I think that they've got this probably very standardized.
Well, you raise a good point, because that's one of the pillars of good wayfinding design, and that is putting the information at critical decision points. And one of the problems that Massimo, the gentleman who designed the metro signage system, Massimo Vignelli, one of the criticisms, and his, in retrospect, he put most of the way signings, signs parallel to travel. The best wayfinding signs are perpendicular to travel. Not too much we can do about that, but it's worthy of investigating locations.
And I'm sorry, I should know the gentleman's name who's representing the public. You had some questions. Did you want to come forward and ask your questions? And that really will be the final statement on this. And your questions may not get answered. If they're questions, they may not get answered, because what we're going to do is give you the opportunity to absorb all, you know, digest all of this and maybe come back to us.
I do still like how you arrange the stations on the proposed cell designs. What still concerns me is that you replace the terminus stations with the cardinal directions. And I think that also confuses me, because I get directionally challenged, especially underground, because it's hard for me to tell which direction that we're facing. So, I would actually propose that we keep the terminus stations on these cell designs, in case if there's people who are directionally challenged. And I think that's all.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. I want to thank you, Mr. McBride. I really appreciate it. I think that this is kind of a really important moment, in that we're getting to make our comments on the at the early stages. The concept stage, not just the first nail is being, you know, put into the signs in 2018. So, and we appreciate your willingness to come back to us, and we will figure out a way to get you these comments in an organized fashion in the next week or so.
Well, thank you. Thank you, guys. This has been very helpful. And don't ever hesitate to contact me directly, if that's okay, if you have some afterthoughts, because, again, good design is the end product of good design involves everyone, particularly the end users, and you guys are certainly that.
Well, we'll be contacting you through the RAC staff coordinator, but people do have questions or follow-up after they've thought about this and heard what other our colleagues have to say, please send the comments to John. Okay.
Both of us.
Okay, yeah, and copy Loida. Within the next few days, let's say a week, okay?
Great.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay. I know we're going to have to rearrange the agenda, so if nobody gavels me down, what I would like to do is go next to the Triple P committee for a review of the bus resolution. And what I'd like to do is, after that, we'll go to the governance committee. The reports on the RAC leadership team quarterly meeting with board are in your packet, and we don't have to deal with that. And if time permits, then we'll hear from budget and finance and customer service. But next is the bus resolution.
Well, thank you, Carol, for giving us the priority over everything else. What I'd like to draw your guys' attention to is a draft resolution. I don't know what page number it's on here. You'll have to skip
second
ahead.
Second to last.
Second to last. Okay. We've been working on this. We've found out that there's a particular board member that's very interested in our thoughts with respect to the bus service, not only along 16th Street, but all the corridors we're calling the Mid-City North-South bus corridor. So that includes 16th Street, 14th Street, 11th Street, and Georgia Avenue. So we've drafted a resolution, and I think the important parts to look at are the ones bolded towards the bottom, which are what we're asking for Metro to look at. And I don't think, Carol, we don't have any time to go over
really anything right now, right? I mean. So first of all, just in terms of the timing, I guess we have a few minutes to talk about it now, Carol.
Yeah.
And then what I'd like to do is give you guys a week to also email further comments. And the idea is we're going to include those comments in a finalized version that we'll present at the RAC meeting on August 6th. And then that will that version would go to the board. If I could just take a few minutes and summarize a few points that are that I think are important, and then Ben, please follow up. Ben's been working on a lot on the details. For me, the important parts are, first of all, this is an opportunity for us to support bus transportation as well, which I think is very important. Any solution in the future that for transportation, public transportation here has to have buses, and in some cases like these corridors, buses will be the solution, the only solution for a while. The other thing is these are some of the corridors that are really getting to the point where their capacity is really restricted to the existing infrastructure, meaning the solutions that need to be done are not necessarily operational solutions. They have to do with the priority that the buses are given on the existing infrastructure. One of the solutions would be to give them dedicated lanes through certain congestion bottlenecks, for example. And this is something that, as the city grows more and more, there are going to be more and more corridors where the bus service is facing this. So this could be a really good model for how WMATA deals with this transition from more traditional bus service to higher capacity bus service. The things that we're asking for are basically to for DDOT to finally undertake a study of 16th Street in coordination with the Metro. The second thing is at the same time really start implementing some mitigation measures and not just wait for the results of the studies, because a lot of these things have been looked at already. And the other thing is we look at this as a big jurisdictional challenge. So anything that not only WMATA and DDOT, but also the jurisdictions in Maryland, for example, have a lot to have a lot involved in this. So we really look at this as a good model, a good opportunity for them to form a model of working together. Ben, would you have anything to add to that, just in terms of presenting the the resolution?
No, I think you pretty much captured it. And we're not looking to impose a certain solution on anybody here. We're just asking them to look into it further, to recognize that there's a problem, and to focus resources in a way that they're not currently focusing resources.
Right. And what I'd like to say is just to provide some context. We had been talking and even put in our work plan. The Triple P committee had put in its work plan talking about the 16th Street corridor. Well, I think at Monday night's meeting we really had a breakthrough, because Catherine suggested, hey, it's not just about the 16th Street corridor. There were lots of reasons, compelling reasons, why it was decided to broaden this and talk about all of the ones that are up at the top of a resolution. I think that really is important, because that means that more people are, you know, have a stake in what we're saying. I think the other thing that you should know is that Matt Brown, who is the interim director of DDOT, apparently, when, as I understand it, Barbara, when Barbara gave the quarterly report, evidently expressed some interest in working with us specifically. I guess he talked about the 16th Street line, but Tom Downs also kind of seconded that. So this is why we think this is something that is ripe for the RAC to take a stand on. So, and if you see any references to 16th Street, it's only because this was all done by, you know, us sort of going in a broader direction Monday night and trying to get it out and to you today, but. Marianne.
It's a question not so much about this as what could be done with this. While this doesn't deal with Virginia, it does deal with Maryland and D.C. and our board members, and you know, we're trying to figure out how do we interact and be helpful. I particularly like the fact that there is the reference to this is the time we need to figure out how to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Is this also something that we would see that this could provide an opportunity for the Maryland RAC members and, I don't know, AAC members to interact with the WMATA board members in trying to figure out how do you make the links?
Well, I think that's one reason for broadening. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm a member of this committee, but I think that, you know, as I said, what we would like to do, I think, as Daniel said, is to put, you know, do the wordsmithing back in the Triple P committee. But one of the ideas was to sort of use this as a learning lab or as a model of how jurisdictions could work together. So even though this is mainly focused on the District of Columbia and Maryland, it would seem that the concept can certainly be broadened to have many other interjurisdictional, you know, partnerships and collaborations, because this is a problem that's not going to be solved by any one jurisdiction or any one agency for that matter. So does that answer your question?
It's not just at the decision-making level either. I mean, you know, one thought just came to my mind is, you know, with this study, we're asking DDOT to work with Metro. I mean, there's a planning agency in Montgomery County, for example, and, you know, having them participate as well, because a lot of their riders are coming through this corridor might be good. And, you know, what would be the mechanism to be able to allow that? I'm not exactly sure.
Well, my suggestion is, and I know this is just hitting you all today, is what's your sense of, is this something we want to take on as a RAC? Because if that's the case, then I would like to suggest that we go back to the Triple P committee to do some further wordsmithing, or you all have a chance to send comments to the Triple P committee. But if somebody here has a strong objection, now's the time to put that on the table. You know, Fred.
Well, so hopefully you won't take this as an objection. But so I was just perusing through the bylaws before I looked at this. And so one of our goals is to provide guidance to the board on things that we think will be a good idea to do. And so one of the things I think needs to happen to this document, it has to be wordsmiths in what is it that we want the board to do? We, as a RAC, are not empowered to go off and create interdisciplinary, intermunicipality activities. We give the board suggestions and then they take action. So what actions are you actually asking the board to do here? Because when I read it through, it's not totally clear to me. So that's something you might want to think about.
Good point.
And I mean, the second point
we wrestled with when we were in the committee, yeah.
So what is it you want the board to do? Because that's the key thing. Okay, number two, so there are, so just so everyone, so maybe not everyone always knows, but there actually are other agencies like in the neighborhood that's job is to do just what you say, which is to coordinate transportation activities of the various states and municipalities in things. Like, so that's what the Transportation Planning Board does, which is like, you know, a few blocks away from here. So it may be that what we've, something to think about, and I've mentioned, but we should probably like drag some of those people over here and have them explain how that process works, because a lot of these things we're talking about isn't going to be paid for by Metro money, and it's not going to be paid, the board isn't going to be able to do some of these things. But if the board would work with the Transportation Planning Board, then that's where the money is to actually fix some of these things.
Are you speaking about the Council of Governments? That is,
well, the Transportation Planning Board
is how the federal money comes to Metro?
Well, the Transportation Planning Board is this is a federally mandated agency that oversees all the federal monies that come to transportation in the
at the metropolitan level.
At the in the three municipality area here.
Yeah, okay, I'm familiar with them.
I can answer those questions. They've actually given a presentation. There was a big meeting over on 16th Street where various bodies, Metro, DDOT, others, came together and said, this is the situation, and this is why it's so complicated. So they talked about who owns what, who gives money to what, and it is very complicated. So knowing that, we're recommending different things to different people. So it's not all in Metro's bailiwick, really. It's not all in DDOT's bailiwick. It's a combination of the two. The regional boards don't really have anything to do with this because the infrastructure is owned by DC or Metro, one of those two. So I see what you're saying on that, but for this particular case, it's really one of those two.
Right, but okay, but my first point was, so just be, some, don't mix up all my points, but one of my first point was this, is that Metro, we need to help develop a picture of what the Metro Board needs to do in this case.
Right.
Our job, we cannot, and according to the bylaws even, we can't go urge the District of Columbia Department of Transportation to do anything. We can say to the board, you need to like collaborate with these guys to do
right.
it. I'm just saying this needs to be wordsmithed in a way that tells the board what the action steps we're recommending they take.
Right, but in that particular case, it's a chicken and egg question because Metro can't do anything until DDOT does something.
Right.
So we consider that. We talked about this in the committee meeting yesterday. Yeah,
Fred,
please
I
finish.
Think
you stopped.
Fred, I think that's a very good point. You know, we have to, our audience is the board, so I think maybe it is just a phrasing thing, but I think you're absolutely right. You know, we have to phrase, you know, how is it that the Metro Board itself can pressure DDOT to do, you know, what we think is important. I think in general what we're saying, and the most important thing that we're saying is, listen, this is a problem, and something needs to be done about it.
Right, but part of it is, so it's not... It's great. Everybody knows there's a problem. We need to write this in a way that the board knows what the action steps they need to take are.
Right. And I see your first point, and I agree with it. And in preparing for the bylaws discussion, which will begin no later than 8:15, we've got to do that. But one of the things that I did in preparing for the bylaws discussion was to read the bylaws of the WMATA board. And one of the things it says is, of course, it's the four points in the strategic plan, engage in strategic regional leadership. And I think it's under that rubric. I didn't really have time to really do, you know, I made my comments, but it was quick. But I think that under that, we can say that WMATA needs to exercise its regional leadership by exerting influence, because you're right. The RAC can only talk to or be listened to by the board. So I agree with you. I think that's your first point.
Carol, can I just say one more thing? It's not an issue of whether people know it's a problem. I think it's an issue that of the relative priority of the problem, given this is a Metro bus problem and not a rail problem. So I honestly think that one of our roles is sort of, first of all, supporting the Metro Bus Division here in Metro in terms of getting more attention to this, and also drawing some maybe greater levels of funding to this, to the solution to this problem than Metro Bus is used to receiving.
So so let me just make sure I was absolutely clear. I'm not even remotely arguing that I don't think this is a problem, that I don't think there's something that's supposed to be done. and that there's actions that need to take. I'm just saying that this document needs to be written in a way so the board can read it and say, oh yeah, this is what we're supposed to do.
I don't think we can disagree with that.
I don't disagree with that.
Okay. So anybody who has any further thoughts, questions, et cetera, are we going to send the comments to John and copy Loida in a week's time? I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Deborah.
Can I say that we're looking for ways to build a partnership? Can you hear me? Can I say that we're looking for ways to set up a partnership with the Metro Board of Directors and CDOT and MDOT? That's a thought.
Okay, I think that's the sense of it. Okay. All right, what I want to do is to move on to the bylaws review, because this is the committee that's probably done the most of their staff work that they were supposed to do, and I would really like to do this. So we clear to close out this issue, the Triple P committee, send any comments about this proposal, specific language, philosophical thoughts, whatever, to John and Loida within a week. Right. And yeah, it's easy. People respond better when you ask them this. It seems to go all over the map when it's sent to everybody else, anybody else but John and Loida, so I would do that. Okay. I'm going to turn it over to Karen for the review of the bylaws.
Great. On May the 28th, the Governance Committee met, and we actually went over the bylaws and incorporated many of the comments that you see here. In addition to that, several of the RAC members emailed comments, so we've incorporated those in this version of the bylaws as well. The goal for tonight is just to really go over some of the high points and try to get your reviews and thoughts on some of the issues here with the bylaws. And we also plan to send this document to the WMATA staff and Chief Counsel's office just to review it as well. After that time, it will come before the board on August the 6th for final review and approval by the RAC, and hopefully we'll be able to send this document to the Board of Directors. So I think because we don't have a lot of time here, we'll just go over this document page by page, and what I'll try to do is highlight some of the key points here. I think that we probably could take two or three more days to provide input if we don't get to it today, and that's something that you could send directly to John and CC Loida. And again, our goal is to get this to WMATA staff for review so that we have a final document to look at on August the 6th. The first item I want to note, I'm on page one, is that we recommend that we change the name or the acronym here from the Writers Council to the RAC. I believe the previous RAC members had some concerns with the use of the word RAC, but our thoughts were that it was a simpler way to describe the group throughout the document.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, it doesn't say Writers Advisory Council. It says Writers Council, which implies something completely different than what we are. So that's the recommendation at this point. One of the big items on page one is the mission statement. As currently drafted, this really isn't a mission statement, so we proposed two options for the advisory committee to review, and we wanted to get your thoughts on this. So, you guys can look over them really quickly, but what we want to know is, do you prefer one or the other, or do you have additional or alternative language that we can use that really describes why we exist, and what we want is something that's simple, clear, and concise.
Discussion then, Annette?
Probably not at this time. If it's a big item and we think we should discuss it now, we can. Did you have thoughts on it that you wanted to address?
I thought you were asking for if people preferred one or the other or something. No.
You want to?
Yeah. Why don't we do that?
Okay, that's fine.
How many for one? also from.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I thought you had your hand up for one. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
My comment would be I liked the first half of one. I think the advisory part. I mean, I think how you do it, I don't know if it's a mission to connect with the community to collaborate. I think it's more a means to the end of the mission is to advise.
Okay.
Okay, so let's redo that because I miscounted. So how many would be in favor of one as written of the mission statement?
So this is two choices, one or two.
Yeah. So it's one, two, three, four, five. Okay, how many are in favor of two as written? One. Okay, so some people didn't vote, so I'll take that.
How about moving one? I thought there was going to be another option
about one. Oh, okay. All right, so maybe she can work that and then, okay. Did somebody over here have something to say? Okay, sorry. Okay, send in comments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll move on. We wanted to rename B, roles and responsibilities opposed to the goals of the Writers Advisory Council. And let's see if there's any highlight there. Okay, so I'll move on. I am on page two, and I don't think there's really any big items on this page, but I did make a comment that I wasn't sure if I agreed that 6, 7, and 8 was a role, goal, or objective of the RAC. And again, you can provide comments on those as well. I am now on page three. There's a section here about the standards of conduct policy, so I did have a question. Do we have a formal policy? And if so, then we should probably outline it in a footnote since we're discussing this policy within the document.
What line is that?
Let's see. This is line 73. And again, just footnote it for future reference as my recommendation. Okay, page four.
Standards of time, was there a 6.5 or a 5?
There was a 5. Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. And that's my question. What's the policy? And if so, let's footnote it. Okay, moving on to page number four. And this is a comment that we received from Ben Ball. And Ben, you might want to address this with the group, so I'll let you touch on this point here. This is about the composition and of the membership.
Sure. My suggestion was, I've always found it to be a little strange that WMATA staff basically choose the RAC members and make that recommendation to the board. It's not the case in all cases, and I'm sure that they'll disagree with me, but for the vast majority of cases, at least the initial vetting of RAC members happens by WMATA staff. And my proposal, it is an admittedly radical proposal, but one that I think we should at least consider, is that the RAC would do that initial vetting and propose candidates to the board rather than WMATA staff. I think that has to do a lot with our independence as an organization, something that has suffered, I think. So that was my initial suggestion. I put an amendment language together that's not reflected here. And I think also the way that the bylaws are currently written, the composition of the RAC is not exactly as clear as it could be. So there were some suggestions around that as well. But the main thing was to clarify how RAC members are selected and how they are recommended to the board.
Do you have language that we can just incorporate into this?
I do.
Because I think that would be really helpful. If we had that language, then we can just put it in the document.
And since this is probably the most greatest departure from what's already in here. I think people should get that language, and we should comment on it.
My point is that that was has not been my experience.
Yeah.
I don't know, is that something that is just applies to the district members or to others, but in Arlington County, our board member is the one interviews us and selects who represents Arlington County.
That's not happening.
Right.
So, okay, so then it's a, then the issue is to make it uniform, but I don't think to just go ahead and say that the RAC should be, then we have to examine how does it work with everybody.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think that necessarily having the RAC choose or have a huge role is necessarily a good idea either. That's like asking Congress to be in charge of who's going to be elected to Congress or, you know, new members to Congress. So there's maybe there's a balance that can be struck.
That's a valid criticism. I'd like to strike a balance, but in this particular case, I'm not exactly sure how I would do that. So I welcome additional suggestions, but I'll forward the language around
right.
And then people
and it,
can.
And it occurs to me that I think I've sort of on a sort of resonate with what Dan said, but I do think that we do go into detail. The bylaws do go into detail about how the RAC is involved in the hiring of the RAC coordinator. I mean, it's very spelled out. So maybe we should at least spell out the process in more detail of the
how the members are selected.
It would make more sense.
So I just want to make a clarification because I think it's unfair to say that the board members are not involved, and that's what Ben said.
Somehow you can not hear you well. Maybe it's
okay, maybe better. Just wanted to say I don't think it's a fair statement to say the board members are not involved at all. They are involved in all the stages of the process just because some of them do not specifically participate in the interview piece does not mean that the board members are not involved in the entire process. And I mean, I can go through the process when the time is right, whenever you want to discuss that.
Okay, so we're going to get the language out and people comment on it.
Okay, great. Page five. There's in the orange here. Carol, was this your comment?
Yes.
Okay, did you want to touch on that?
Yes.
To explain?
One of the benefits I've gained from attending the AAC meetings is to pick up some things, okay, steal some things that they do that are better than ours, I think. And one of the things that they do is that AAC members are appointed in July, which, I mean, take office, appointed, reappointed July 1st. So that means that the board backing up usually selects them or appoints them in April. Those people have an opportunity to attend meetings between then and July 1st so they get an idea of what's going on. But most importantly, they, by the time elections are held of officers, they have some sense of who's, you know, who is in a leadership position or who should be in a leadership position. Yes,
yeah,
Patrick.
Thanks, because you just hit one point that we were discussing, and I said, I came in and the July thing's good, and then I said, but we have our elections in September. That doesn't give new members, we have about seven, I think, that are now on, that doesn't give them much time to look at me versus, let's say, somebody else or two or three others that might want to run. So I had said, you know, I like the way the RAC is doing elections in January. But the conflict there, because it gives members more 6 months to figure out, you know, either these people know what they're doing or they're bozos or whatever. But the problem is that then you run into problems with term limits. And so, we didn't resolve that. So you're right. I like the July appointment time frame, but the election then seemed to be a little bit of a problem, and I'm not quite sure how to resolve that.
What I had suggested is that we have the appointment of new members in July and the election of officers in December, means in the last meeting in December. That way, new members have enough opportunity to decide whether people dribble when they speak or not, and new members have an opportunity to show their chops so that they are not excluded from leadership positions when those elections are held. So that's, that was my thought.
Yeah, in that system, like a third of the people aren't able to be running because their term ends before their term of office ends.
Yeah, as I said, I think we need to do something. So if people have a better idea, I'm all for it. But I do think that the appointment in July is good.
And it might be a good thing. And I think that we both have just run into the same problem with appointments ending at a certain time. So I think that this is a pretty good sort of area that if we can both come up with an answer, we're doing the same thing that you're doing, looking at our bylaws. And so, and I think being able to mirror between each other is a good thing. So we don't have an answer for that one yet, but I like the July time frame. It's just that it's messing around. The other answer is, and we said this, and I got chewed out a little bit, is that we don't have the authority to extend our terms to make up for a few months or whatever that, you know, for an appointment. That appointment can only be extended by the board. So we've got to figure that out. But we've got a couple of months to do. It looks like you guys are sort of in this, doing the same in the same time frame that we are. That's kind of interesting. If both of our, I think ours will be ready to go to the board maybe by September. I don't know about yours.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting for them to get both sets, wouldn't it? At the same time? That'd be kind of cool.
Okay, well, if people have ideas about this, basically, we really need to respond to both things. When should we have new appointments, and when should we have elections? It makes no sense. Sorry.
Right. That was a really key point.
Excuse me, Carol, when are they now? Because I thought people came in January, elections were January.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what happened. So you say, hello, I'm Carol Walker, vote for me.
Okay, so we're trying to separate them somehow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. What did you say? Yeah. But of course, if you follow Ben's idea and you appoint the people you want to the rack, say, but go on, that's another story.
Okay, we'll move on.
Okay, sorry.
No problem. I am now on page 6, termination of membership. We just added some clarification language here on this particular section, but you can review that at your convenience. I am now on page 8, and I don't believe that we have anything that's really significant here. Right. Because I believe the RAC chair is currently elected without regard to jurisdiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So on page 9, let's see, we had a comment from Catherine Quartum. And Loida, did you want to respond to that? We talked about this briefly during our governance committee meeting, but I think you can probably explain this a little bit better than I can to Catherine.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's about how the chair and vice chairs of the WMATA board, I thought I understood it, but I evidently didn't.
Right, so it's succession. So,
yes, the bylaws for the board say that the chair and vice chair are elected without regard to jurisdiction. That is correct. It's never happened before. I think that was a recent change. You know, that went in about 3 years ago when that was a big change from the board bylaws. But there is now a new committee, which is the executive committee of the board. That's new. They never had that before. And the executive committee is one representative from each jurisdiction. So it's the chair's vice chair now, the chair, vice chair, second vice chair, and then the immediate past chair.
Okay.
Just looking at one major difference between the RAC and AAC, and you guys can yell me down, but the AAC chair, I think, has three two-year terms or something like that. It's more than just 1 year. I don't know if the RAC has ever thought.
No, the chair. Can be reelected. You can be reelected.
But your term.
Two terms. Yeah, for two terms.
But your term is 1 year, right?
But the term is 1 year.
Yeah, our terms are 2 years.
No.
And I think you can be reelected twice or three times.
Okay.
So, and I don't know if that is important to this group.
No, no. You know what it says? I'm sorry. Excuse me. No person shall serve as chair for more than 3 one-year terms, so you could actually be reelected twice.
Okay. That's pretty similar then to what we do.
But the elections are every year. Are the elections
yes.
every year for you guys?
No, for us it's every 2 years. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I'll just speak from what my experience is. It takes about a year to get your feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, Catherine, did that answer your question? Okay. So, Lloyd, you guys will add some clarifying language here so that it mirrors the WMATA board?
No, no. I'm saying in orange that I mm-hmm. think the chair should be elected without regard to jurisdiction, and that the vice chairs should be representative of the three jurisdictions. I think that's vitally important. I think that they're before the governance working group, and this goes back to Frank's time, it used to be that the chair had to be from the jurisdiction that the WMATA board chair was in. And I don't even remember what, and the vice chairs were really relatively unimportant.
There was two vice chairs, one from the
other jurisdictions. That's right. And so now I think we should elect a chair without regard to jurisdiction, mm-hmm. but we should have a vice chair for each of the three jurisdictions, which, period.
Along with that, and I'm sorry that I wasn't able to get to any of the meetings. I really wanted to participate, but schedule conflicts. But one of the thoughts that I had, and it's maybe a late addition, is that for the vice chairs that are jurisdictional, I've always thought it was strange from when we instituted that I, as a Maryland member, vote for who's going to represent Virginia and the district on the leadership team. Now, granted, we don't have, you know, many jurisdictional battles here, but I was wondering if there was a possibility in these revisions to add that Maryland members elect the Maryland vice chair, district members elect the district vice chair, Virginia members elect the Virginia vice chair.
For the purposes of the elections, the at-large people are from their respective jurisdictions. But you know what I'd like to suggest? A better thing. I mean, one of the things that is important to me, and I was on that governance working group, is to have the vice chairs do more than be decorative items. And they obviously
right.
do more than be decorative items. I mean, in other words, to be honest with you, this is to avoid having a chair who's either a tyrant or incompetent, you know, is to have a leadership team that would, you know, that would mitigate, so you can't, you know, one bozo can't take the whole place down. So I think it's important to have vice chairs that have a role to play. And what I would suggest, Frank, is I think that the Maryland delegation should that the person who runs for the jurisdictional vice chair has to be nominated and seconded by the Maryland person. But that vice chair will of necessity do more than just represent their jurisdiction. Like last month, I was in Providence, Rhode Island. Barbara from Virginia gave the chair. I mean, I think you have to be cognizant of the fact that they do more than just represent their jurisdictions. They also can stand in for the chair, and that's why I think that the vote should be rack wide, but maybe the nomination should come from the delegation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, we can put language together like that. I mean,
okay, no problem. And the majority of the other comments are mainly consistency-wide type of comments here. I don't think there's anything else here that's significant other than, let's see, page 15. There's a comment item on line, page 15, line 432. Do we want to include the procedures for public comments within the bylaws? And it looks like we do, but I wanted to make sure that was brought to the attention of the full RAC. And then on page 16, there's a suggestion that we have standing committees, and that's page 477. The other fairly important suggestions that were made was to include the dates that the bylaws were approved and revised. So if you have comments on any of those three areas.
Mary Ann, I'm sorry.
I have a question from on page 4. I'm not sure that I could read the English correctly. Under composition, who are the additional two members that are appointed? Are they, are there just two additional at-large members that are appointed to the board? Because it says they're 20 plus one, and then there's a sentence at the end that says an additional two members shall be appointed by the board without regard to jurisdiction.
That's what needs to be reworked, to be clarified.
Because then that would say that there are 23 members or something.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I think that sentence just has to be moved. Not ours. Not the version I have here.
What line are you on?
Hey, are you on line 17?
116.
Well, I'm an at-large person. Because the chair of the AAC is considered to be the third at-large person, right?
Right, and I think that maybe
updating in that when the bylaws were initially written, Patrick, as the AAC chair, was actually appointed by the general manager. So that was the distinction, and now that the board appoints the AAC as well, that probably needs to be refreshed.
So are we clear what we're going to do? We have a lot of homework. So are we clear what we're going to do about that? Ben's going to incorporate some language. Maybe Frankie and I'll get together and incorporate some language about the, election of chairs or nomination of chairs, and get these in again to John and Lloyd. And as I said, it's easier to get it into them and then send it out to the people that have to see it. And again, can we do? How much time do you think we need? Maybe if just say a week. What is today? Today is July the 9th. Mm-hmm. Can we get everything? And maybe we'll send out a reminder in the morning what everybody owes. Is in a week's time we're going to get everything together about the signage, the bylaws, and one other thing, and the bus resolution. Because I guess my whole thing is I'm now into, frankly, the deliverables phrase. I think we've done a great job of building good relations with WMATA staff, with the board, et cetera, enhancing, and not to say that they were bad, but I think we've really reached a good point there, and now we got to deliver. So I'm into, when are we going to get certain things done that we can send in?
With the bylaws, are you intending us to look any more, or is the governance committee going to just finalize things without going back to the rest of us?
Oh, absolutely. We want to hear your comments. We want your feedback now. The goal is to get everyone's comments in now, so when we review this final document on August the 6th, that we have a pretty comprehensive document to review. Yes, it's going to continue to go around. So within the next week. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
The RAC does the RAC meet in August? The board
yes.
Doesn't.
You all voted to meet in August, I may remind you.
Okay. Right, okay, good. The board doesn't meet, though, in August.
No. So I'm hoping it's sort of like when your boss is out and you can play, you either play or you play catch up. I'm hoping that we can use the month of August to get a lot of this work done because we won't, so that by the time the board meets again in late September, we'll have some deliverables.
And I know we went through this fairly quickly, but if there's like something here that really gives you heartburn or there's an issue here that we need to discuss as a group, I say send that comment to the whole group and let's just discuss
yes.
it.
Yes, that's
right,
a very
as a
good
whole,
point.
By email. And that's all I had.
To the board by September.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or even before that.
That's interesting. That's about the same time frame we're looking at, too. Very interesting. Good.
Okay. Can I have a motion to adjourn? I know there's some business we might not have done. Thank you. Bye.